This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, horse people. This is Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December 5th, 2013, episode 802.
Good morning!
It's Thursday.
Let's kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
That's right, folks, it is Thursday, so that means you only have one day left to surf the web for off-kilter classifieds and email them to jennifer@horseradionetwork.com with bad ads in the subject line. On tomorrow's show, like we do every Friday, the reading of these ads will reveal the top two, to whom we will present a gift pack from Dr. Rose's Remedies. Dr. Rose's Remedies skin treatment salve and spray are 100% all-natural products. They are anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, antiviral, and antifungal, and they make great stocking stuffers. Dr. Rose's are made with all human-grade ingredients and are safe and effective treatments for scratches, cuts, and abrasions on your horse. Ask for Dr. Rose's at your local tax or feed supplier, or you can visit them online at drrosesremedies.com. Also on the prize table for tomorrow's show, a Horses in the Morning Prize Closet Special, featuring a Horse Radio Network combination mug and pen holder, and a tin of Ghirardelli drinking chocolate. Now tuck in your earbuds good and tight, or turn up your car radio as you enjoy this mashup of new shows from the Horse Radio Network. First up, Horsemanship Radio with Debbie Laux and Glenn the Geek, featuring ACTHA founder Carrie Scrimma, Philip Rawls on reined cow horses, and Debbie handles a listener question on performance anxiety.
This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to Horsemanship Radio. Welcome back, everybody. Horsemanship Radio airs on the 15th and the 30th of the month. I have my producer, Glenn the Geek, here.
Hey, how is everybody?
Good. He's here to tell us more details about the network. Hi, Glenn. Can you tell us all the ways that the listeners can find the shows?
Yep. And if you're new to listening to Horsemanship Radio, this will help you out. The best way to listen is through our app, either in the iOS or Android app store. Just search for Horse Radio Network, and you'll find all 11 of our shows there. You can either stream them right through your phone or download them and listen to them later. It's so simple and easy. It's the best way to do it. Or you can go to horsemanshipradio.com or horseradionetwork.com, and you can catch all the past episodes. Actually, we just went over on Horse Radio Network, we just went over 3,200 episodes that we've had over the past 5 years.
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
And you have five of those.
Yeah. We're gaining on you.
That's right. You're catching up. Hey, it's holiday season, and you have all your shopping done. Did you buy Monty anything yet?
No. We're headed to Brazil on Tuesday, though, so maybe I can get him something exotic while down there. Yeah, what do you get Monty Roberts for
Christmas? That's a good question. I was going to ask you that.
Yeah. Yeah, we ask each other that. The whole family does that. We don't have any little teeny ones running around anymore.
I'm not really a stuff person, and I got to imagine that Monty isn't either. He doesn't seem like a stuff guy to me. He could care less, probably.
No, could care less. Yeah. He does like that store as seen on TV, though. He's really funny about
really?
That.
Really? That I wouldn't have guessed.
No, you wouldn't have guessed that. But you know what he does is he goes in there and buys goofy gifts for everybody. That's what's fun about it. Like those hoses that shrink up into 6 inches long and they're, Yeah, he loves that stuff. But that's the only shopping he does that I'm aware of.
Who gets him to go clothes shopping? Like
once? Oh, no. No, 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 no.
No. No. No. Doesn't happen.
He's got a uniform. Everybody knows his shirts and his red tie. Yeah, yeah. And the only thing that's the same all the time is his bolo, you know. But the jeans, my mom literally takes them and runs dye through the washer again just to keep them all crisp because he hates buying new clothes. So she keeps them crisp and colorful by dyeing them. That's a secret right there.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny. Well, what's coming up on today's show?
I'm so excited. We've got Carrie Scrimma from ACTHA, the American Competitive Trail Horse Association. And she has a long and varied career all the way from East Coast English riding girl to a founder of really what is known in the Western world as a CTC, a Competitive Trail Association now, which is really, it's got a Western hat pretty much as its look. So she's really has a varied career that way and has changed hats many times, but really knows horsemanship down to the ground. I think you're going to love hearing from her. And then we've got a very young guy. He's about 30 now. His name is Philip Rawls. We'll find out from him how old he is, because I'm going to ask him. And he has, the interesting thing about horse trainers is it's interesting to say he's young when they're 30 years old, but a lot of these guys, they started when they weren't even double digits. So they literally have decades of work under their belts when I say young these days. And he is changing the face of training in the reining world for the better, I think. We'll hear more about Carrie Scrimma after this from Index Fund Advisors, matching people with portfolios.
Hi, I'm Mark Hebner, president of Index Fund Advisors and proud owner of Monty Roberts' Willing Partners graduate, He's a Sugar Bear. You know, investment portfolios are a lot like horses. You need to find one that best suits you, your temperament, and your stage of life. Some people might like an energetic horse and an aggressive investment portfolio, while others are more comfortable with a gentle ride and a more conservative investment portfolio. The trick is to find the one that's right for you. That's what Index Fund Advisors is all about, matching people with portfolios, risk-appropriate, low-cost, and globally diversified investment portfolios. You can find the right portfolio for you by taking the Risk Capacity Survey at ifa.com. That's IFA as an Index Fund Advisors. Or you can call us toll-free at 888-643-3133. That's 888-643-3133.
Now we have Carrie Scrimma, the founder of ACTHA, the American Competitive Trail Horse Association. Welcome, Carrie Scrimma.
Well, thank you, Debbie. I'm delighted to be here and be talking with you today.
We're honored to have you on. You have such a long and varied career with horses, and I just love your upbringing. But I especially love your heart that you have for horses and the reasons that you continue. When you could be riding into the sunset with your wonderful husband, Tom, you guys are harder. I think you're working harder than you've ever worked in your life. Am I right?
That is absolutely true. I kind of thought we'd be, you know, in rocking chairs on the back porch by now, but that's true. We are working harder and longer hours than we've ever worked before. But, you know, again, it's a labor of love, and it's a passion. And, you know, when you have a job kind of like that, it doesn't really feel like work. I mean, there are times when it does, but, you know, every day I am happy to get up in the morning. And that's, you know, I think that's the most important thing, you know.
That is. That's the sign that it's really not a job. It's your passion. For those people who are listening that don't know much about the American Competitive Trail Horse Association, we have a link to your website in the show notes, and we're happy to share that with them and be the first to tell them about it. But tell us a little bit about what your goal was in the 6 miles and six obstacles idea behind American Competitive Trail Horse.
Well, you know, my career with horses, my love of horses, I guess I'm going to kind of start with that because, you know, I think in my bio it does say I grew up in New York City, which is not not the place most horse people come from.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Montana.
Texas.
You know, I grew up in New York City, and when I said to my parents I wanted to ride a horse, they said, why don't you take a cab like everybody else? You know? So it was somewhat unusual, but you know, I think for a lot of people, the love of horses is born in them. It's just born there. My parents had no idea where this child came from. You know, whose family did this child really belong to? But I was born loving horses, and I was able to, through determination and luck and whatever, I was able to pursue that. And I was a show horse person, you know, first of all, to begin with. But I always did enjoy just riding out on a horse, just riding cross country.
Good old trail horse, yeah. What makes a great trail horse? We'd love to know that from Carrie Scrimma.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. I think any horse can be a great trail horse, first of all. It was God's intention, I believe, for a horse. They are a roaming creature. Mm-hmm. They love it. They enjoy it. It's natural to them. So, you know, one of the things with AXA, as we started talking about, is that you don't have to buy a particularly specially bred horse. You know, this isn't like cutting or racing or mm-hmm. jumping where, you know, a bloodline would matter. Any horse mm-hmm. is really fairly well adapted for the trail. What makes a great trail horse? It's the same thing that makes a great any horse. Mm-hmm. It's an attitude. It's a willingness. It's a partnership. Nice. And it comes from the heart of the horse as much as anything else, any physical attribute that the horse would have. Mm. Yes, we want athleticism. Yes, we want balance. Yes, we want bravery. Those are things you want in a horse. But again, it's that willingness to be a partner and you know, to help the human along. It's their feet that are touching the ground. So, you know, just about more than any other sport, this horse and this rider have to communicate beautifully. Because, let's face it, you're not in the safety of an arena.
Right.
You know, you're out on trail where anything could happen and probably will.
Yeah. How do you anticipate that? How do you do that when you're home and you're getting ready? You're going to leave for an AXA ride in a couple of weeks and you're trying to get all those conditions and conditioning. How do you prepare for that?
Well, you know, I think it's a matter of really riding your horse. Becoming a partner with your horse, it comes from shared experiences. And of course, you know, lessons are helpful. You know, being a good horseman is an important part, having a good seat, having good hands, and being very well balanced.
Mm-hmm.
We have to remember that a trail horse is not working in a prepared arena. You know, when you ride a horse in an arena that has been watered and raked and, you know, everything,
right.
This horse isn't going to step in a hole. He's not going to be on rocks. He's not going to end up in a bog. You know, you've got prepared footing. But on trail, the balance of the horse and the balance of a rider is critical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be critical. It could be life-threatening for a horse to, you know, and a rider to be balanced. So I would say that it's very important for riders to understand that, you know, trail riding, in a way, is its own sport. It's
mm-hmm.
not just something that you do, you know, and it's a wonderful way to refresh your, you know, arena performance horse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I have never seen a sour trail horse. I've seen a lot of sour arena horses. But once they get used to the trail, something just perks up in them, especially, you know, if your horse has gotten lazy or bored. They
That's
just perk up when they go on trail.
That's true.
And so, you know, it's a wonderful thing. It refreshes their mind. It keeps their muscles strong. It improves their balance, you know, and they have to learn where to put their feet. But it's also important, very important, for the rider to stay balanced, to understand that, you know, in this sport, you know, we ride basically in the middle of the saddle, not, you know, up forward where, you know, like if you were riding a jumper or a hunter, you might be, or, you know, back further where, you know, if you were doing another sport, cutting or something, you might, you know, you might be sitting back a little bit further. Mm-hmm. But this is a sport where we try to stay balanced. And by that, I mean that the rider sits in the middle of the saddle and their feet, you know, they're, so to speak, their head and their heels, you know, are still in a straight line. The hips, the shoulder, the heel, your ears are in a straight line because this horse has to balance himself on uneven terrain. Mm-hmm. So it's important for you as the, you know, the rider to aid him in every way possible to stay balanced and to stay quiet. So a good seat is very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Soft hands, wet saddle blankets. So I'm hearing lots of practice and letting your horse do his conditioning and his discipline from the trail, from the natural habitat itself. Is that right?
Absolutely. And, you know, what people... You know, often, you know, in the show ring, with the different breeds of horses, but the riders are doing a lot more manipulating of the horse. As we're on trail, this horse needs a soft contact, you know, a soft rein, because he needs his head and neck to be balanced. He also needs his head and neck for eyesight. And, you know, this is your partner. It's his feet touching the ground. He's going to tell you if it's unsafe, you know, or, you know, something like that. That's what you're counting on him to do. Mm-hmm. You know, a trail rider needs to look up and forward, you know, up between the horse's ears. You don't want to get knocked off by some tree limb.
Right.
You know, you need to be looking where you're going and what's up on trail ahead of you. But the horse needs to look at the ground, you know, so he needs to know where to place his feet. So, you know, more on trail, I would say, than, you know, some other places, certainly in an arena. But you want to allow the horse, the movement of his head and neck so that he can adjust his eyesight, because they don't focus. I'm sure you know that. They don't focus quite the same way that we do.
Yeah, that's a good point about their eyes. Yeah. Yeah, explain a little bit about that. Maybe people don't realize that.
Well, when a horse raises his head, that's the position where he sees distance. We've all seen our horses out in the pasture, and all of a sudden they throw their head up and look, you know, because they think they've heard a sound or a predator or somewhere. You know, we've all seen those horses do that. And that's because to see distance, they raise their head. Mm-hmm. But when they need to see the ground beneath them when they're walking along, you want their head in a lower position. And, you know, because trail riding is longer, you're not on the horse for just 2 minutes, you know, going around in an arena. You're on the horse for several hours, very often. You're not going to ride in the same kind of collected frame that you would be possibly in an arena riding. You know, no one rides around, you know, in complete collection for 2 hours. You'd be exhausted, and so would the horse.
Yeah.
So it's a much more relaxed thing, but it has a purpose, and that is that this horse be allowed the movement of his head and neck and not be manipulated, so to speak, by the rider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are times when, you know, yeah, you would want to collect your horse, you know, when you're called on to do an obstacle. But this is, you know, I think one of the things that's so nice about ACSA and the trail riding is that, you know, very often trail riders don't pay attention to their horses.
Yeah.
They're talking to their friends.
Yeah. Yeah, and we women tend to do that, don't we? Yeah. I mean, we go out there for a good chat. That's true.
Yeah, and they're just walking around on a loose rein, and they're not paying any attention. And the horse, you know, find out this horse is getting a little floppy, and his training is kind of falling apart, and he begins to know that you're not paying mm-hmm. attention to him. Mm-hmm. So he starts to take advantage little by little by little. Mm-hmm. And so I think... one of the blessings of ACSA is that it keeps people sharp. Mm-hmm. It says, you know, now you can ride around and chat with your friends, you know, between obstacles. But here comes an obstacle, and you need to focus. You need to pay attention to this horse. And that's also a great, you know, life kind of thing. You know, stress all the time wears you out. I mean, you would, you know, if you were stressed all the time in your work or whatever you did, you would, you know, you would be just an exhausted person, and the horse would be also. But a little stress is good if it's followed by relaxation, by periods of relaxation, because it keeps us sharp. It keeps us mentally active. It keeps the horse mentally active and focused. So here you're riding along, chatting with your friends, talking, meeting new people, having a great time in the woods, and then all of a sudden there's a little obstacle. You know, that's the time when you focus, you know, start to pay attention to your horse. And it gets people thinking more, paying attention. And one of the fun things I love when I judge is watching these people and these horses think their way through an obstacle, because they have to. A lot of our obstacles are, although natural in nature, require a little thought. How am I going to do this? You know, and what if this situation actually happened to me? One of the obstacles that I like particularly, Debbie, is one that, well, a lot of the obstacles come from my experience.
Oh,
my experience is trail riding. And so I've kind of made up little stories, little scenarios. And one of the things that happened to me was I was riding along with my dog. My dogs accompany me, and my dog was bitten by a rattlesnake.
Oh.
And dogs, when they're bitten by rattlesnakes, they can't continue to follow you home. It's not like they're going to come home on three legs. They just lay down, and they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And so I had to pick up my dog and put him on the front of my horse. Mm-hmm. And the horse had never done this before.
Oh, new obstacle.
Yeah.
How big is your dog? Big dog.
So I had to lift up my dog, put him on the front of my saddle, and then I had to remount, you know, kind of holding the dog in place because he was like, uh-oh. So it became an act of obstacle.
That's a mounting block lesson and a baggage lesson. Is that right?
Right. And so, you know, in essence, we don't use a real dog. We use a stuffed toy. Uh-huh. But again, people have to think about how would they go about doing this? How do you put, you know, and this could happen. You know, so there are a lot of really fun kind of obstacles that have come from our experiences. You know, ACSA, we try not to do dangerous things. But thinking things, you know, fun things, you know, that's really in our, you know, mm-hmm. our wheelhouse. So
it is fun. It is fun. I think I've been on about a half a dozen rides now, and I can highly recommend 6 miles, six obstacles is a lot of fun. It's just enough to spend a good day out on the trail without and still going a round trip and getting it all done in one day and enjoying yourself. I love it. Tell me a little bit about your some of your goals for 2014. I heard about Diamond in the Rough, and I love your heart and what you're doing to give horses a job.
Well, that became obviously important to ACSA and to Tom and myself, you know, is that wow, there, you know, there's this problem in America. We have unwanted horses, or, you know, we're not taking a political stance on slaughter or anything else. We're just saying, this is a problem. Where is the solution? And we want to be part of the solution. Now, you know, as I said before, any breed of horse can be a trail horse. And so there are so many able-bodied horses that are retiring from some career, such as racing or something like that, that do make great trail horses. You know, this is a job for them. The right. problem is unemployment.
Yeah.
The problem is the horses need a job.
That's right.
And ACSA is a job that any horse can, you know, can be good at. And, you know, the riders can learn to enjoy, and the horse can learn to enjoy. It's very natural to a horse. Mm-hmm. So it's not really very hard to teach them to become good trail horses. It's got a lot to do with experience. And, you know, so we have this Diamond in the Rough Award, which is primarily aimed, or is absolutely aimed, at rescue horses. Mm-hmm. Horses that have been gotten under, you know, dire circumstances. And a rider or a contestant has to do to get his horse into the Diamond in the Rough category would be to let us know that he was adopted from a rescue facility.
Okay.
And that certainly would be one way. But certainly there are other circumstances, you know, that might qualify as a rescue. And all they would all the, you know, contestants would need to do is write us a little note telling us why they think this horse was, you know, was a rescue or should be in the rescue category.
Uh-huh.
And we would review that. And, you know, if we felt that the same way they did, then he would be eligible for a Diamond in the Rough Award.
I see. So it could be a neglect issue. They've taken a horse on that was in a situation that could be life-threatening. We have categories of hoarders. I know what you mean. So anything like that that you guys deem, you just want to pat these guys on the, or as we say, rub on the forehead, and reward these people for reaching out to those horses that don't have a job right now.
Absolutely. You know, obviously rescue is a great place to adopt horses, but there are other situations, mm-hmm. you know, and we don't want to leave those out either, where horses are, you know, in need of help.
That's great, Carrie.
We just, you know, we see the problem as an unemployment problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's two ways to solve this problem. One is to throw money at it, and we do that.
Yeah, we do.
You know, we do have a charitable arm. But the other that we feel is even more important is that they have a job.
That's wonderful. And I know this year you're partnering with PATH International, which is therapeutic riding centers. I think there's something like 850 across the nation. I'm really proud of you for that, too. And you've got a big event coming up March 14th, I believe. Is it a St. Patrick's Day angle on that? Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. This is really Tom's baby. You know, he's kind of our marketing head, and, you know, I'm really the horse, you know, kind
I'm
of the
glad
horse
you're
person.
Here then. Yeah, we're the horse people too. But tell us just quickly about that, and we'd love to help you with that.
Well, ACSA has kind of partnered up with PATH, which is the Therapeutic Riding Centers. You know, we're running, you know, in essence, ACSA is a way to for the ride host to raise money. So this is a way for PATH to raise money for PATH. We're kind of hoping that this really takes off, and all these centers, you know, have rides, and it, you know, it becomes a movement.
Mm-hmm.
And we're thinking big. We're hoping to raise $1 million for PATH.
Good girl.
So, And but, you know, this is to help. I think it's been recognized, certainly, you know, more in recent years, how much horses and humans have, you know, have in common, and how much the movement of a horse can aid a human physically and psychologically, both ways. You know, riding on a horse, you know, has always made me feel good, but I, but, you know, then I've heard scientific evidence of why it makes you feel good.
That's right. That's right. And they're starting to figure it out, aren't they? That we knew it all along.
Yeah. So, you know, I think for the, you know, children who have handicaps, who, and, you know, this is wonderful to pair them up, you know, with horses and people who understand horses, I mean, and understand, you know, the handicaps, and that's the role of the PATH Center. You know,
well, I love that you've partnered with them to put money where a good cause should be, and that brings in horses and jobs, so it covers that unemployment figure, and it also brings people together in a really healthy choice, a great recreation, and a great therapy.
Yeah. It is. It's great for the kids. It's great for the horses. It's great for the parents of these children. And so we are, you know, we are delighted.
That's wonderful. Wonderful, Carrie and Tom. Well, thank you so much. We would love to have you back again, Carrie, and have us learn maybe some tip, a favorite tip or a favorite thing from you. So if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you back, and we'll listen from the very best, Carrie Scrimma of ACTHA. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Philip Rawls was born in Ojai, California, raised around horses and brought up in the horse show industry. Philip's dad, Ron Rawls, is also a renowned trainer. And Philip began showing when he was only 11 years old. He began his own training business when he was 20 years old, and he's gone on to win multiple championships in the show ring. We will welcome Philip Rawls right after this commercial.
Hi, I'm Monty Roberts, and I know that I'm transforming the lives of horses globally. You can learn to do it too on my Equus Online University. There's a new lesson on there each week, all the way from join up to advanced. Watch world's champions give their lessons. Join at MontyRoberts.com. Go to my Equus Online University. You can transform your horse too.
Welcome, Philip Rawls. Happy to have you on the show.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, we're really excited. I mean, everybody's listening to your accomplishments and where you've come from at such a young age. And I know that there's probably people that would love to hear how you did it, you know, the secrets of how you started. I imagine it's something a little bit like this. You work really hard, you grind like crazy, and you get somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's kind of the recipe for having any success in anything that you do. You know, I think having some great opportunities you know, being able to capitalize on them and, you know, give yourself the best opportunity that you can with the hard work and the horsepower and the people behind you, you know, certainly makes a makes or breaks, you know, you know, all that hard work.
Yeah, that's just like a accessories poster or something, right? It's all those things. But I know you started at a really young age around horses. You always are around horses, right?
Yeah, my dad trained horses, and so I grew up in a horse training family. So I was always you know, brought up from the get go. You know, learning, you know, good horsemanship skills and, you know, the philosophies and hard work that it takes to, you know, to put your mind in the right spot and your work ethic and, you know, be able to hopefully take it to the next level.
Mm. You've done that. You've accomplished a lot. And I don't think it was in probably the most conventional way, because I've watched you out in the arena taking your time with horses and letting them find themselves. I listen to you give lessons or work with somebody on a horse, and I hear words like, try to find something that he can do well. Let him find himself. You know, show him the easy road. Tell me about that. Tell me about your horsemanship behind how you create those champions.
You know, I think, you know, a big part of that influence comes from, you know, having the opportunity to spend time, you know, around, you know, Monty, who I, you know, got a chance to ride with quite a bit. You know, my dad, obviously, who kind of started his training career under Monty. And so, you know, a lot of the philosophies and ideas around my training style and program has developed from that thought process of trying to take a horse and get his potential of whatever that level is going to be. Hopefully that horse reaches his potential, you know, as a horse trainer. I mean, that's your goal, is to bring out that horse's ability and potential. You know, and I had the fortune of being able to ride with Harold Farron also, you know, and he was an extremely well-rounded horseman also, from all different walks of life, from dressage horses to circus horses to, I mean, he trained everything. So it wasn't, you know, his training style along with, you know, several of the other people. It was a little more about just being a good horseman and training the horse's mind and being able to, you know, unlock all that information.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. I'd love to hear the philosophies of some of these people that have been around a long time, and I'm so glad that they mentored you. It's nice that they're sharing some of that thing. Would you... I know that it's so important where you get a horse. Would you rather have a blank slate when you get your horse in to train, or would you rather have some miles on him and then you polish him? Tell me about how you receive a horse to go into training.
You know, I've done it both ways. I've had some horses come to me late in their, you know what I mean, in their training career, where we have, you know, 4 or 5 months before the fraternities, and I feel like that is kind of a totally different training style, because you really don't know necessarily what they've been shown and what they haven't been shown, and exactly what kind of training method that they've, you know, explored with them. So I feel like you know, it's kind of a roots cube when you get a horse late like that, you know, and you are constantly evaluating the situation and trying to see, okay, well, I have this amount of time. Do I have enough time to start over and try to retrain this, you know what I mean, this particular maneuver, or do I need to just take him for what he is and just try to clean it up and polish it and go? You know, and mentally, if they're the type of horse that can handle a program being, you know what I mean, a little bit different than what they've been used to, you know, it'll work out.
Okay.
I always prefer to kind of have a horse fresh. If I can get them from the start, I really feel like I'm just more comfortable through the whole process, all the way through their training and showing career, because I know what's going on, and I know their tendencies. I know their insecurities. I know their strong points. You know, I feel like I understand them and have and just have a good relationship with them. You know, sometimes when you get them late, you're not even sure really, you know what I mean, what direction to go, other than just starting to do the maneuvers and, you know, and hopefully it's as polished as you want.
Yeah, I think I've heard you say that it's important those first rides, just how important those first rides are, those patterns that you establish first.
Absolutely. I feel like that relationship that you start with them on the ground from the get go, you know, the first 2 weeks of groundwork on a young horse are crucial, and the first 90 days will be with him the rest of his life. And so, depending on how that goes, you know, you could take a you know, you could take a great horse and stub your toe once or twice in the first 90 days, and he might not ever forgive you. Or if it goes right, you might take a good horse and make a great horse because he's mentally strong and he understands what his job is and his program and his willingness to do what you ask him to do. You know, it makes a big difference in the long haul when you're talking about hopefully having a horse for 3 or 4 years of showing, you know.
Good. Yeah. So you're looking for longevity. You're looking for a relationship with that horse for a career.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that for me has been, you know, has been something that I've really worked hard to do is I'm looking to have horses that I don't want to turn new horses over every year. I want to try to, you know, start with them and hopefully see them through their whole career, you know, whatever that might be. You know, and some horses, you know, they reach a certain point and, you know, they're outstanding individuals and they can go on and show and keep up with the pace, which is great. And there's some horses that, you know, that might not be in the cards for them, but at least you can have, you know, an impact on that horse and, you know, maybe where he goes or what kind of the rest of his life could be for him, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some reiners, low level, I suppose, are known for just overworking a horse, just punishing if they can't, you know, if the cow goes and, you know, if a cow gets sneaky. So, but I've seen you back off a horse, try to find, like we said earlier, where he can excel, where he can find his confidence. Is confidence probably one of the most important things in a horse? Like, that sounds obvious, but.
Yeah, it really is because, you know, I feel like, you know, first and foremost, they need to understand what their job is. It doesn't mean that they can do the job at the level you're hoping they can do it at, but they need to understand what their job is.
Okay.
You know, whatever that is, and especially like showing the rain cow horse, where they have to do 3 different events. You know, it's not every horse is going to be super strong in all 3 events. You know, they'll have their strong points where they might be really good in the cutting, or, you know, I mean, a little weak in the reining and good down the fence, or vice versa. They might be a great reining horse, great fence horse, and be, you know, average in the herd. You know, so you have to really try to play to your horse's strengths. And so, you know, and a horse being confident is absolutely the most important part of that.
Mm-hmm.
If he's confident in his job and knows he can do his job consistently, that's about as good as it gets, you know.
Yeah.
You know, because that horse is going to take that information. And when things get tough and you need him and you need to call on him a little bit extra maybe than you normally would at home, he's going to offer, you know, and he's going to try for you right there. And because that's the difference between winning and, you know, maybe being at the bottom of the finals.
Great. Yeah. So don't be so rough with your horse. Give him some confidence. And what do you do? What are the consequences out there for him? If a horse makes a mistake, what do you ask him to do?
Well, you know, obviously, it really depends on that horse's mental state and why he made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Did he make a mistake because maybe he got a little out of balance and it was an accident? Mm-hmm. Or did he make a conscious decision not to do what you're asking him to do?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a big difference. And it can look the same, but the mental thought behind it is crucial, because if he made a decision not to do it, you know, he just said, you know what, I'm not going to go to the right or put the cow or whatever it's going to be, well, then he might have to stop and turn around a few extra times and do some extra work and, you know, or if he lets that cow go, he might have to go gather him up. He might have to run a little farther, a little faster until he gathers him back up and gets back in control of the situation.
So you put him to work.
Yeah, you want to make them feel like they're in control, whichever direction, whatever choice they make, it was their choice. So if he chooses to let that cow go, well, then he might have to run around the arena a little bit more. You know, he's probably going to have to do a little extra work until he gets back and get back into position. But if it was, you know, most of the time in a situation like that, I'll usually give him the benefit of the doubt the first time. The second time they do it, if they do it the same way, then I'm going, okay, well, you know, we might have an issue here. The third time he doesn't, you're going, okay, well, now he's going to have to work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because as big of athletes as we ask them to be and what we ask them to do, you know, they're going to get a little out of balance, or they're going to mistime something, or they're going to have issues just like anybody else.
Right. You know what this reminds me of a lot, Philip? It reminds me of growing up at Flagstaff Farms. You know, if we did something wrong, I know you live there. If we did something wrong, we went to work, didn't we? Till we kind of, and we knew the contract. So sounds like the training methods were a little bit similar. Do you think he treated us like horses? I'm hearing this.
I think the philosophy all the way around, I think it works on anything.
Good.
You know, I think that, you know, I mean, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter whether it's my cow dogs or my horses or people or whoever. You know, I think that in general, everybody, you know, we all have a choice. And I think if you have the tools to do it, you know, you can make the choice one way or the other, you know. And horses are extremely smart. So they don't want to do extra work if they don't have to. You know, if they can learn that if they execute it properly and they try for you and put a little effort into it, their job's done. Well, then pretty quick they start looking for that reward, that little pat on the neck, a little, you know, you can sit here and catch your air for a little bit. You're doing good. You know, that's what I wanted. I feel like those horses having the opportunity to get rewarded, even though it's work related. It's still a reward, you know, when they accomplish something, or they stop that cow the way you want them to, or they hold that stop the way you want them to, you know, any little reward right there, they pick up on it, you know. So I think that's something that's really important.
Good. Well, it's working for you. So you have accomplished a lot at this point, but are there still goals that you have, things that you want to accomplish?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the list is endless. you know, I think that obviously winning the Snaffle Bit Fraternity is the highest priority. You know, I feel like that's a major goal that I would love to achieve. That and winning the World's Greatest Horseman. Those are my two. You know, those are my two majors. You know, I've had success at the, you know, doing the derbies, and, you know, I've made the Derby finals 5 or 6 times now, and made the finals at World's Greatest, and Mag 7 and a few of those others, you know, which have all been very exciting and fun, and loved every minute of it, you know. But obviously that, you know, that golden egg is the Fraternity for me. And I've grown up watching it with my dad showing there, and all of my friends and fellow competitors, and that's what we're all after. Having that horse and that all the stars align on the right day and everything come together.
Yeah, how fun. Well, you did well this year. So you were 2 in the top 25, and you were 15th on Black Design, Monty and Pat's horse, and you were 20th on Jackie Sparkle.
Yeah,
is that right?
You know, I had it was a good Fraternity. You know, both of my horses there this year were, you know, I had a good runs in the prelims, nice solid runs all the way through the deal. You know, I had a couple little things in the finals that I wish I could have had back. But you know, when you're going that hard at it, you know, it's kind of one of those deals. It's either going to come together or it's not. And if you stub your toe, you know, it, know, it's not all going to come together. But overall, my horses showed really well, and I was very happy with them.
There you go, and that's Monty's horse. So pretty exciting there. And then his half brother is Blackie, or Black Design, who you took 15th. And I'm really excited about how you're doing, and we're going to follow you, Philip, and see how your career unfolds, because you got great big things coming, I know. And we'd love to have you back on. We would love to record a tip from you, because I know people probably ask you all the time, what's your secret, what you got going, what's your favorite thing to tell people about your training methods. So we'd love to have you back if you'll come.
Yeah, absolutely. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Well, now it is that time of the show where we do the horsemanship mailbag, where Debbie shares all her deep, dark secrets. And we have a listener question. And the question is, why does my horse perform perfectly at home, but when I take him to a big show, he chokes?
Yeah, he chokes, right? No.
Well, or...
So what happens here is... I think you have to think about what you're doing, dear reader. The horse probably is not the one that is having performance anxiety. It's more likely that we're telegraphing these things. So what you want to do is investigate what is happening when he's choking. If you're taking him to a show and that's the only time that he, whatever's happening, maybe he's not jumping like he's supposed to jump, maybe he's refusing to go into the arena, whatever it is that you're defining as chokes, it's because we're doing something different. Choking's reserved for human beings with performance anxiety, okay? It's not within the makeup of a horse to view any special occasion as more important than another. And they just don't perform badly because they're nervous. They might be nervous because of us, because think about what you did on a normal training day. On a normal training day, you go out there, you scuffle your boots up to the stall, you get them out, you do your routine. But what do you do differently on a show day? Do you get them out early? Do you plait the mane? Do you braid the tail? Do you load them in a trailer? Are you a little more uptight, maybe a little less patient than normal? You know, even just getting them halfway through their flake of hay and out the barn is stressful. So their neocortex, the horse's brain, is different than a person's. That part that says planning and, you know, anticipating, that's not part of their brain. That's part of our brain. And they simply do not have the mental capacity to be capable of experiencing those feelings of performance anxiety. So we'll just have to, we have to look in the mirror, and we have to decide that we're going to do all these things that take our adrenaline up often and well enough that we will bring our adrenaline down. So if it just means going to a show and not getting in the arena, do that. If you get up early, put them in the trailer, plait the mane, put a saddle on that you don't, you know, normally have all polished and smelling like. Think about their senses. Their senses are acute to what we are doing. That's their preservation method. They feel our anxiety. They feel the difference in the routine. That's my answer for horsemanship mailbag today.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty's looking forward to meeting some new friends, two-legged and four-legged, in November and December 1. November 30 and December 1, it's Horse Training Workshop in Brazil. It's just outside of Sao Paulo. And also December 7 and 8, a Horse Training Workshop outside of Sao Paulo with Monty in Brazil. January 25 and 26, we have a Saturday night evening, a night of inspiration with Monty Roberts at Flagazette Farms in Solvang, California, at Monty and Pat's home. And on the next day, January 26th, we have a Life Lessons. It's a personal development workshop at Flagazette Farms based on the lessons learned from his autobiography. It's 58 weeks on the New York Times bestsellers list, and it's called The Man Who Listens to Horses. So you can find more at MontyRoberts.com or by calling 805-688-6288 in California.
So it looks like by the schedule, you're going to let him have some time off the beginning of January and actually spend some time at home in California?
He is. He's going to be at home in California, but he doesn't let grass grow under his feet.
It's not really time off. It's just
no. He doesn't tie a line to his toe and go fishing or anything like that.
No surfing. He gave up surfing a long time ago.
He does ride though. He'll be happy to be back on his horse, nice Chrome, and overseeing the Willing Partners horses and just seeing all the babies. You know, the babies will start coming in January. I just love that time of year. In California, the weather is pretty mild. Maybe not as mild as Florida with you, Glenn, but it is mild and nice there. So there'll be a lot of things to enjoy. And he'll be filming some of the Equus Online University lessons. We've got scripts piled up for him. And we also have one thing that's not mentioned in there is Horses and Soldiers. We'll have a clinic in December for our veterans with PTSD or PTSI, as he calls it. It's not post-traumatic stress disorder. He thinks it's an injury. So we call it PTSI.
Very good. Well, for details about today's show, you can go to horsemanshipradio.com where you can find the links, photos, and more information about all of the guests. If you've forgotten, you know, who was on the show or their website, that's the easiest resource to find is just go to horsemanshipradio.com. And as always, we love your feedback. Please follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/Monty Roberts and Twitter at twitter.com/Monty_Roberts.
Very good. And many thanks to our sponsors, Index Fund Advisors and Equus Online University. And be sure to visit all of their other great shows on Horse Radio Network at www.horseradionetwork.com. Until next time, have many happy horse hours.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Thursday Horses in the Morning mashup. We are changing gears for the second half of the show with Chasing a Fox, hosted by Helena B., whom you all know from her longtime co-piloting role over on Stable Scoop, and Sissy Finn, who is her cohort in comedy, and she keeps it real whenever Helena has those squirrel moments. So let us gather the hounds and head on out.
This is Helena B.
And this is Sissy Finn.
And you're listening to Chasing a Fox on the Horse Radio Network. Welcome back, Sissy Finn.
Good to be here, Helena B.
It really is good to be here. We're going to talk a little bit about why you're so happy to be here. You had an adventure in the woods that we're going to talk about on the show today.
I have an adventure every day. My Lord.
I know. And when we say the adventures never end, it's true. They never end.
I know.
We have... Actually, a lot of things have happened to us. Well, not a lot, but three big things have happened to us since our last show. And we're going to talk about all three of those things, as well as a guest. We have a guest, don't we?
Yeah, Nikki Lambert. She is a third level dressage rider who contacted us and said, I want to go hunting. And we grabbed that like nobody's business.
We did. So we're going to hear from Nikki about what her first hunting experience was like. It was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And the other things that we have coming up in this episode, George Morris.
Oh, yeah.
Hunt and, ball.
Yeah.
And Sissy getting lost in the woods.
Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. <No. laughs>
George Morris, hunt ball, getting lost in the woods. Those are three pretty good things to talk about. But before we tackle any of them, we're going to take just a minute to highlight one of our wonderful sponsors, without whom this show would not be possible. Ontite is an innovative and unique magnetic stirrup system that ensures an optimum, safe grip between your boots and your stirrups. This grip provides the rider with better stability and balance, comfort, increased contact with your horse, more effective use of the leg aids, and confidence in the saddle, no matter what kind of riding you do. In fact, Ontite can be used by all riders, from beginners to amateurs to Olympic champions. Visit the Ontite website to learn about the benefits of the Ontite system their technology, and view their range of top-quality stirrups, footwear, and accessories. You can find them online at ONTYTE.com. So you had fun hunting yesterday.
Well, most of the time I had fun hunting yesterday, but you know, you can't even make this stuff up.
No, you can't.
It's so crazy. Yeah, I got lost in the woods yesterday. It's just nutty. Why can't I even get this started?
Because it was traumatic.
I'm still traumatized.
It was traumatic. Hunting is not necessarily traumatic. It's exciting and sometimes a little scary, but not necessarily traumatic. Okay, let's start from the beginning. You're out with the hounds, and you're at a new fixture. Well, a fixture that you've not ridden.
I've never ridden this
fixture
before.
You've never ridden before. Okay.
Yes. A beautiful fixture. It was fabulous. And so we go hunting. I ride an older horse, and I don't want to break him, so I'm very mindful of what I do with him. And this particular hunt started out really fast, which is fine. You know, he can go. He's got game. But he was getting tired, and so I decided I'm gonna save him, because our biggest meet of the season is in 10 days. And so I thought, you know what? I don't need to do this to him. So I'm gonna go back. But we had been out hunting probably for an hour and a half when I decided that he had had enough. And so I, you know, asked the field master for permission to be excused. And she said, well, do you know your way back? And I said, I'll figure it out. I mean, you know, I can follow the ATV tracks, I'm thinking to myself, and the hoof prints. But that's
so
not
you,
really how
you were
going
to backtrack the way you came.
That was my plan.
Okay.
That was my plan. Because I had no idea where I was. I had no idea where I was.
Okay.
So I started to go back, and I'm, you know, feeling pretty confident, see the tracks, you know, there was some of the footing was soft enough that I could really see where the horses had been, and off I went.
And you're fine. And your horse is fine because he's confident. He can go alone. He can pull away from the pack without a problem.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He just turned around. We walked away and off they went. So then I got deeper into the woods, and, I couldn't see tracks anymore. And I came to a spot where there was three ways to go. I could go left, right, or straight. And it didn't look like straight was the way that we came from. It didn't look familiar to me. So I took a right. And then I realized.
And that was the last right you took.
Yeah, that I was really lost. I was really lost. And so we were in Maudsley State Park. So it's I think it's like maybe twice the size of Bradley Palmer. So it's about 2,000 acres, maybe.
It's big.
I mean, it's big.
It's big, yeah. You can get seriously lost there.
Seriously lost. So I'm thinking, oh, my God. I had a moment of panic. It was like, wow, I'm really lost. What am I going to do? And my first thought was, I might have to call the police. And then I thought, oh, my God, I can't call the police because then they'll...
That's gonna reflect bad on everything.
Yeah, they'll send a helicopter. Like, I was like, I can't do that. Says he breathe.
You'll be
for
on
a
the
minute.
News.
Breathe for a minute. Yeah, I'd be on the news. So I'm thinking, oh my god. But then it occurred to me that I have an app. I had my phone with me, and I have an app on my phone. It's made by Woofware, and it's called Ride Live, and I downloaded it just like 3 weeks ago, and some girls that I ride with up here are my friends on it. So if I ride out alone, what it does is you turn your ride on, you turn on the person that you want to let know where you are, and they can track you live when you're riding. So I was like, oh, I have my app. And my friend Risa, I turned her on immediately. And I called her, and she picked up the phone. And when I heard her voice, I fell apart.
Ugh.
And I was like, Risa, it's Sissy. I'm lost in the woods. I didn't say I'm lost in the woods. I said, I'm lost. She's like, oh, my God, are you okay? And I'm like, no. And I was in tears. I was so nervous that I would, you know, nobody would find me. She's like, "Sissy, it's okay. Is your ride on?" I said, "It is." And she's like, "I'm going to hang up and I'm going to try to find you on my phone, and I'm going to call you from a landline so I can look and see where you are and talk to you." So I hang up, she hangs up, and then I'm like, okay, maybe I'm going to be all right. So then it took her a minute to call back. So I'm sitting there panicking a little bit. I'm like,
is this going to work? Is this going to work?
And then I'm like, I think I'm going to go in my little sandwich case and get out my shipwreck rum and have a little sip of something to try to calm my nerves. So I did. And then she called me back and she said, "I've got you."
Ugh.
And I said, "Well, where do I go?" And she said, "Well, I can't tell yet because all I see is woods around you. So I need you to start walking, start moving your horse again." And it's like a 10-minute delay. And then she could kind of see
the feed image and what's actually happening in real life. Okay.
Yep. Yep. But it's unbelievable. The app is unbelievable. You can actually do, if you do the live feed, it is, I'm assuming it has something to do with, you know, satellites and everything.
Yeah.
But it actually, you could see me. You could see trees. You could see cars. You could see people. So it's literally, will zoom right in on you. It's crazy.
The app is actually called iRide Live, lowercase iRide Live. It's by Woofware. It's a smartphone app. So, okay, so she's got you. She's got you. There's a little bit of a delay. She's zooming in, and she sees trees around you. She sees woods, but she knows where you are.
She knows where I am.
Then you begin the process of getting out. So she walks you through. She's telling you, you know, proceed left, go straight, go right.
Yeah. But I, when she first found me, like I said, I'm in the middle of the woods. And so she said, "Well, where did the fixture start from?" And I was so like overwhelmed. I told her the wrong place.
Oh.
So we had started from Maudsley State Park, but there's another fixture right down the road from that we do too.
Spencer Little Farm, right.
So I said, I think we started from Spencer Little's Little Farm. And so she was trying to bring me back there.
Oops. That's
which
not
was
funny.
Like another extra 2 miles or 3 miles away.
Actually, it's further than that, but.
Okay. So, so she's like, "How'd you get over there?" So like we both, and then she's like, "Well, go this way." And I said, I don't think that's the way. And she's like, "Oh, you're lost. How do you know which way is the way?" And I said, "I don't know, but it just doesn't feel right. Like, no, that's not the way." And then she's like, "Sissy, where did you start from?" And I said, "Oh my God, we started from Maudsley." And she's like, "Oh Jesus, that's why it's not right. You know, just come on." So she managed to turn me around and get me where I needed to go, and all was right in the world. I finally got back and I lived through it. But I got to tell you, everybody needs this app, and we have to get these people on our show to tell them it actually works.
It does work. And then you got a lot of regular phone calls when you finally got back to where you were. Like the field had come back to the trailers and everybody was looking for you. And and it's nice to know that you were you're so well loved cared for. But thank goodness for this app, huh?
Thank goodness. Yeah. I even got a phone call from one of our field masters who wasn't out that day, who heard that I was lost, and he called and left me a message because I didn't pick up the phone because I was talking to Risa, who was getting me out of the woods, and he said, "Sissy Finn, it's Dougie. Do you need me to come? I'll find you. Don't worry." And so that was great. And lots of people called, you know, "You okay?" "Yeah, I'm fine." I mean, we weren't in any danger except that we were lost.
You were just
I'm going to pack snacks in my sandwich case for next time.
Yeah. And flares or something.
And what?
And flares.
Oh, I know.
Snacks, flares. Oh, and through all this, St. John was the saint that he is.
Oh, just walking along.
Yeah. Do-do-do-do-do.
You know, and if we were near, but if we were near home, I would have just dropped the reins and he would have taken me home.
Yes.
Because he would have known his way. But he and I both had no idea. So we're just going along anyway. So I made it back and all is right in the world again.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'm glad that you made it back and we're going to hear some more great adventures. But first, we're going to take a quick break for another one of our sponsors, Sparkle and Boom. Sparkle and Boom is a new media marketing company. Our mission is to help small businesses add some sparkle to their marketing in order to get some boom in their bottom line. Our creativity, combined with an extensive background in the equestrian industry, makes us perfectly suited to help your business capture the potential of social media and the ever-changing World Wide Web. Visit us online at www.sparkleandboom.com. A little bit of an interesting weekend last weekend. Maybe it wasn't a little bit. It was a big weekend for me. For the first time ever, I attended a George Morris clinic.
I know, I'm jealous.
Here on the south coast of New England. I had no opinion about George Morris. I didn't hate him and I didn't love him. And I know that most of the riding world is divided. They either love him or they hate him. But I audited, and it was a three-day clinic, and I was only able to attend one day, and it was the first day of the clinic. And the impression that I was left with was that George Morris deserves every ounce of his legendary reputation, because the man is extremely knowledgeable and absolutely loves what he does. He loves teaching, he loves coaching, he loves making the horse and the rider work together so that they really are a team and an accomplished team. It's not just about partnership. You know, a lot of, I think, natural horsemanship trainers and other types of centered riding and classical training, they focus on the partnership between the horse and rider. What I found different in George Morris is that he takes that partnership to the next level, which is, let's not just be partners. Let's accomplish things together as a team. And is he ornery? No, I don't think he's ornery. I talked a little bit about this in last week's Stable Scoop episode. He's not ornery. George Morris simply has no tolerance for laziness or ego. And there are some amazing riders in this clinic. Absolutely amazing riders. And when you ride with George Morris, you work pretty damn hard to keep your ego under wraps. You just do, because it's just right. He's George Morris. But if you're in the audience and you're paying close attention and you've watched a lot of riders go around like I do, you can tell who's working harder to keep their ego down than some
funny
of the others. And he can see it clear as day. I mean, he has seen gazillions of horses and gazillions of riders, and he knows what he's working with. And those are the people who he's going to call out. He is. He just has no tolerance for ego or for laziness.
Would you like to ride with him?
I would.
Yeah.
And I'd be totally willing. Hey, you know what? We all have ego sometimes. When my ego gets a little too big for me, something happens. We all know that. You come off, your horse doesn't do what they want you to do. You end up eating some humble pie.
Yeah.
I'd be more than willing to eat a slice of George Morris's humble pie. It was, but you know, the man is 76 years old and he got on half a dozen horses for, you know, either to illustrate a point that he was making, either to fix a horse or to show a rider what they were doing wrong. And at 76 years old, the man can ride like nobody's business.
Oh, I bet. Wow.
He can ride, and to watch a horse respond under his seat is, it talk about humbling. You're like, oh, phew, I know nothing.
I know nothing.
All I can do is keep my eyes up and my heels down and stay on. That's what I can do.
Yeah.
And yes, is he harsh to some people? Yeah, he is. He's just blunt. But like I said, I found him to be more blunt with the people who had egos or just who weren't sharp. You know, It shows a lack of respect. And one of the things he talked about was the way his philosophy and everything he does, his entire career, has been about putting three things in priority. The first of which is the horse.
Yeah.
The second of which is your tack. And third comes you, the rider.
Hmm.
And all three must be attended to with the greatest of detail and respect. And, you know, so that's what he's saying, you know, your horse, the mane should be pulled. Your horse's coat should gleam. This isn't, you know, just because you want it to look good, but because it shows that you have a great amount of attention and respect for your animal and your tack.
Yeah.
A lot of how you ride and how you compete and perform depends on your very important equipment. And anybody who's ever had a piece of leather break, especially when you're out hunting.
Yeah. Not good.
Knows how important it is to take care of your tack. And third, yourself. You are part of the equation. Your horse, your tack, and you. All three are essential to the sport, whether it's hunter jumpers, fox hunting, dressage, whatever. And, you know, if there's ever a lack of respect, he sees a lack of respect for one of those three things, he's going to call you out on it.
But that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing at all.
It's not a bad thing. So there was a fellow in there who was, he was a big boy. He looked more like a football player than mm-hmm.
A jumper.
Jumper or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And George told him to go on a diet.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I can't say that the fellow was fat, but I think what he was trying to work on was staying. One of the things that George was preaching was it's really important for you to stay with the motion of your horse. And in sometimes part of staying with the motion of your horse is getting out of your horse's way.
Mm-hmm.
How to stay light in the tack. 3-point, 2-point, when each type of seat is appropriate. And this kid, he was one of those who had a little bit of an ego. It may be well-deserved. He was a wonderful, wonderful rider. But he was not, either he wasn't listening or he was not able to get out of his horse's way. So he was hard on his horse's back. He was a big boy, mm-hmm. 6 feet maybe.
Yeah.
And again, built like a football player. And George was like, you know what? If you don't have the athletic conditioning or the fitness to stay with your horse's motion or to stay out of his way, then you need to drop a couple of pounds and get fit and see if that helps.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't more of a question of, do I think that's going to help? It was more of a, yeah, drop a couple pounds, work on your conditioning, and you'll be able to ride your horse better and your horse will appreciate it.
Absolutely.
So it wasn't so much about, you know, how the guy looked in the tack.
Mm-hmm.
It was more about how his conformation was creating some trouble for effective riding. Now, whether or not a diet would solve those problems, I don't know. But I think I saw the intention behind what George was saying.
Yeah.
And he had a little bit of a hard, it wasn't even a hard edge. It was more like, hey, kid, you want this to work? Go on a diet.
Well, he's a realist.
Yeah. And he's no patience for people who talk during his clinics in the audience.
Or look at their phones.
Look at their phones. Oh, my God. My phone is in my pocket going. I was like, I know it's on silent. But George Morris is the one and only person who would hear my phone buzz. He would hear the vibe. He probably feels the vibration of my phone. I would highly recommend that if you are anywhere within driving distance of a George Morris clinic, that you'd pay the couple of bucks to go audit. You will learn so much, so much. And I was lucky enough to have him sign my first edition copy of Hunter Seat Equitation, which was previously signed in purple crayon by my 3-year-old. and that didn't faze George because when he opened up the book, I said, yeah, my 3-year-old signed it first. And I said, she's 10 now and kind of regrets it. And he said, well, does she ride? I said, well, of course she rides.
Yeah.
He's like, good. It's all good.
Oh, good.
That's and he fun. Proceeded to sign it with enthusiasm. And he shook my hand and he looked me in the eyes and smiled with a warmth and a positive energy that just, it made me recognize that this man really, truly enjoys what he does and truly appreciates the student, a riding student, no matter what mm-hmm. kind of student you are.
Yeah.
He loves what he does. So it's worth it to go audit a clinic if you can.
All right. There you go.
All right. And that's my George Morris gushing segment of the show.
I know. You know what? I'm sorry I missed it. That sounds like it was incredible.
I'm dragging
but I'm,
you
I'm
next
probably
time.
Not well enough behaved to go to a George Morris clinic because I'd be the one in trouble.
Yeah. Well, we all
just to audit. No, just I'm just talking about sitting in the stands.
Oh my God, I could. I'm not a good enough rider. I'm not even close to riding a George Morris clinic. He would have a field day with me. and he'd probably have me losing 20 pounds.
Oh please.
But that's neither here nor there. Talk about losing 20 pounds. Well, we had Hunt Ball this past weekend.
I know. We've been so busy the past week. Holy moly. I know.
And all that trying on dresses and does this fit and should I wear Spanx under this and does that fit? Blah, 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 blah. In the end, it really didn't matter because we had a great time.
We had such a great time. Such a great time. I was lucky because Helena and her boyfriend came up and stayed with my husband and I for the evening. And oh my gosh, it was just,
I
wish the weekend was longer. I wish it was a longer weekend.
Yeah. Our Hunt Ball is, it's held at the Hunt Club and, which is a very old, elegant, understated facility. So it's not like there's in a big ballroom. It's not a hotel or anything like that. So there's a lot of rooms that twist and turn and there are steps to go up and slate floors. So to navigate in a long gown with high heels and a couple of cocktails in you was, we did it though. We did not wipe out.
Lots of people did, but we did not.
So one of our friend's husbands did take a spill on the dance floor. And then
he took her with him.
Oh, she went down too?
Oh yeah. Oh,
I miss that. Well, she had on some pretty cool high heels. Now our Hunt's tradition is to wear, it's ladies wear either white or black gowns.
Yeah.
And Sissy and I tried to have that change and they were like, yeah, no. Like, you know what? A lot more people would come if you would let us wear hot pink. And our MFH was like, psh, no, nice try. So anyway, this good friend of ours was wearing this beautiful white gown. Mm-hmm. And on her feet were these amazing platform peep toe leopard print heels with a hot pink heel.
They were awesome.
They were so cute. But it doesn't surprise me that if her husband went down and she was dancing in those heels, I would go down with them.
They were really high,
But they looked fabulous. And, you know, if we can only wear black or white, we kind of have to break the rules with our shoes.
I didn't break any rules. I should have. You did. You had on beautiful blue shoes.
I had blue shoes. I had a black gown with blue shoes because I'm a punk.
Nobody would know. I mean, it was your gown was actually, it was still lying. It was beautiful. When we walked out to my car to get over to the club, Helena brought some leaves with her because it was just so beautifully flowing in the back. So nobody would know that she had blue shoes on, but we did. They were fabulous.
walking around the cars in the parking lot, collecting fallen leaves in the back of my dress. That's typical. I'm surprised I didn't show up with hay in my hair. Or I probably did at some point.
No, you were gorgeous. You had your hair done. You had your makeup done. You had your ball gown on. It was just, you looked great. You looked great. There was no hay to be seen.
There was no hay to be seen. And I have you to thank for that. You know, prior to going to all these fancy events with Sissy, I never really thought about going to have my hair blown out or done or my makeup done before a big event. But everything you do these days shows up either on Facebook or in, not necessarily in print, but on the social pages, whatever. There's just instant photos, Instagram, all that. So you never know when there's going to be a photo opportunity. And it doesn't hurt to put your best face forward.
Yeah.
And you were on to that secret for years.
You know, because you know me, I just want to get dressed up and go places, I just want to get dressed up and go hunting, or I want to get dressed up and go to a party. And, you know, I love to get dressed up. So, yeah, when somebody says, do you want to go here? I am all in there.
All in. And you're getting your hair done first.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So here's, and this is one of the things that I came away with. Any woman can be confident going into a black tie event. It's just, it doesn't matter what you're wearing. If you're comfortable and you have a little something on that makes you feel really good, whether it's a sparkly necklace or your favorite pair of shoes or, even a beautiful coat, or even if it's, you know, a handsome gentleman or a handsome woman on your arm. Mm-hmm. You know, you can feel confident and have a great time. But I'm definitely going to say this.
What?
Go get your hair done. Seriously, go get it blown out, put up, but none of those spirally curls. That's too contrived.
Right.
Just go get your hair done. Go get it blown out. And you can even do your own makeup. But good hair totally sets the stage for your entire presence.
That's definitely true. Definitely true.
Because we've seen a lot of like really attractive women with just
bad hair.
Bad hair. Just get that stuff done.
Yeah, get it fixed. Come on now. Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say. But so we want to hear about your hunt ball if it's coming up. Ours is a little bit earlier in the season because, our season wraps up shortly after Thanksgiving. So we usually have our hunt ball in November.
Yeah.
Some of you guys don't have them until after the turn of the new year. But if you have a hunt ball coming up or if you've just had one, send us a shout, call us, send us an email, find us on Facebook, let us know what your favorite part of hunt ball is, or send us pictures with what you're wearing. We don't have to share them, but if you'd like us to, we will.
I know. And if you want us to come to your ball, just give us a heads up.
Give us a heads up. We hope to find some pictures of Sissy and I at our hunt ball. Our photographers take a lot of candids, and you know what? I'm not putting a picture up of me with the double chin. It's just not happening.
Oh.
Just not happening. So if we can find a couple of good shots, we'll put them up.
I'm sure that we can find some shots.
You can find some shots. Okay. And next up, we are going to talk with Nikki Lambert, third level dressage rider who decided to take up hunting for the first time. So we're going to hear from Nikki about what her adventure was like hunting with, she went out with Monmouth, right?
Yes, she did.
She went out with Monmouth hounds. And here we go. Welcome, Nikki, to Chasing a Fox in a Little Black Dress. We are so excited to talk to you about your brand new hunting adventures.
I'm excited to talk to you guys, too. I want to thank you very much for putting me in touch with my brand new hunting adventures that I've had.
Awesome.
Tell us a little bit about your background, like what kind of riding you do and how long you've been riding. Let us get to know you.
Sure. I've been riding since I was 6 years old. I used to do hunter jumpers up until about 7 years ago. My horse and I actually were in a car accident together, and I had taken a step back and said, let's just do some dressage to kind of, you know, get us back into the groove. And that was 7 years.
What kind of car accident were you in? That's kind of scary.
She was in the trailer in front of me. I was in the car. I was driving my car behind, and a lady fell asleep at the wheel and crashed my car and crashed into the horse trailer. Luckily, four horse that and the horse where I crashed, there was no horse, but the other three were in there, my horse included. So, and at that time, it was kind of getting where she wasn't really enjoying jumping anyway, and I wanted to communicate with my horse more. And my trainer now, you know, I absolutely love, you know, I Lou Spruce Farm. And it was just a perfect match. So we've never really looked back, but I've always wanted to try hunting because it just looked fantastic.
So you slowed down a little bit from the world of hunter jumpers, which can be pretty intense. You know, it's a highly competitive thing. So you slowed down a little bit and then you found, is it a dressage barn? Do they just do dressage?
Yeah, they just did dressage. I mean, my trainer actually has hunted before and has done, you know, jumping and stuff, but now it's mainly just dressage barn. Everybody rides dressage. That's all it is.
And you're a third level dressage rider?
I am.
That's impressive. And so it's so interesting to me that it being a third level dressage rider that you'd want to come out of that ring and come out fox hunting. I mean, that is just so awesome.
Well, horse really enjoys trail riding and being out in the open. And to the surprise of everybody, my horse is actually an off-the-track thoroughbred and has been through a lot, both on the track and just, you know, trying to transition. She has been a hard horse. People were pretty much scared of her. You know, up until a couple of years ago, she was just, you know, didn't want to work, but just figured everybody's out to hurt her and then realized that, you know, nobody is. And we started developing a bond and a trust. And she just loves being out in the field. And she took to this hunting like a duck to water. I mean, she really loved being around the horses and the hounds and the outside and just being able to, you know, be a horse, which was nice.
So you obviously ride with a fair amount of devotion for mm-hmm. the level at which you are riding and competing. You spend a lot of time with your mare. How long have you had her?
I've had her for 7 years.
Okay. And so you want to try this hunting thing. She trusts you. You understand her. Clearly you guys work together. And you go out on the trails. You've got somebody, a trainer who's hunted before. Now you're like, I've got this bug. What yes. pushed you? What was the thing that said, okay, I really need to do this now. Let's get out of the arena, off the trails, and push it up a notch.
Well, I think this has been kind of our defining year where we just have built a bond where I know, you know, I can trust her completely on that. And she also has cancer. So we're kind of limited with time of, you know, yeah, what, you know, how much I can get done with her, you know, trying to push this a little bit to the limit to see how much we can accomplish, you know, while we have time. I've always wanted to do it. I'm like, you know, this is going to be the horse I'm going to do it on because we've come so far together. We've had so many, you know, trials, and we've had so many issues trying to work out. And, you know, she's just been, you know, my best friend at this point. And I really wanted to have experience with her. So I was like, you know, I think she's going to be all right. I think she's going to handle it just fine. And, to the chagrin of my husband, he's like, you know, just let me know when you're in a hospital. Call me when you're there, because he knows how he knows her. She knows, you know, from her ups and downs. And he's like, oh, God, I can just see this ending badly. And I was like, no, we're going to be fine. I'll work out.
I have like a gazillion questions now. What kind of cancer does she have?
She has melanoma.
Okay.
Yeah, so usually typically gray horses do develop melanoma. So she's had it for some years. So we're just, you know, doing a medication, you know, wait and see. She's 13 years old now. So we'll hopefully have some more years. I know it's not the same as humans. So
right.
We might have a longer time. But still, you know, I'd like to see what we can accomplish in the time we have.
It does. It gets you thinking, and it changes your priorities a little bit. And it can motivate you to take on new adventures that maybe you wouldn't have otherwise. And so she's, okay, so you've got sort of that in the back of your mind. What are her hot buttons? What makes her, I don't want to call her difficult, but what makes her unique and challenging?
Well, lots of things. I mean, she's not built for dressage. She's not built, she's really, you know, still think she's a racehorse some days. We have our racehorse moments. So she's a mare. She's very opinionated. In fact, I nickname her the poodle. Her barn name's Erin, but I call her the poodle because she's very opinionated, very poodly, you know, won't want to step in the mud, wants things done her way, and you need to kind of respect that. And she doesn't like anybody who's on her that's not confident. So she, you know, has a lot of issues. She depends on feedback from the humans. She's not a horse that stands on her own. Like, I wouldn't, you know, can't really put everybody on her.
Yeah, so she very much needs a partner. She needs someone who's equal in effort there. Yeah, okay. And so you're like, let's just go hunting now. We're going to give it a try.
Yeah, I'm feeling
that
froggy
is so
today.
Funny.
Let's do it. Yeah, I'm feeling like, you know, let's go do it. What was funny is I read the manual you sent me, and of course it's like, do not go on opening day. Do not do all these things that we were planning on doing. I'm like, we're going to go. Why not? You know, it's like, do not go. But yeah, opening day was the day that we had our first hunt. It was the blessing of the hounds and everything. It was awesome. It was really cool.
Oh, goodness. So tell us about how you got, you know, you made a relationship with the MFH, and then what the plan was and how you went about it and all that, so folks can know that it's not as hard as they might think it is.
No, and I actually thought it was going to be harder. You guys have put me in touch with Meg, and I can't say her, I don't know how I'll say her last name correctly, who's the master of the hunt. I didn't know she was the actual master until the day of.
And then you're like, hunt. Whoa.
Yeah, I was like, because I read the book, I'm like, you can't talk to them. You have to be like really prim and proper, and I'm very kind of a goofy person, so I'm like, oh, God. I'm like, I'm going to do something stupid. My horse is going to do something stupid, and we're going to get kicked out. And so she was like, let's talk. Have you ever done it before? I'm like, no. And she's like, but, I have skills. My horse has been around dogs. She's been around lots of different stimulation that, you know, and the show ring does that too, where, you know, things happen and they have to not respond to things. So she's like, I think it's going to sound okay. The weekend I could do it was the weekend of opening day. She's like, well, look, you know, we want you to come out. but you might just, it might be too much, you know, there's too much going on. There's, you know, it's just a lot more people that are there. And you might not have a good time, but come on out. We'll see how she does. And, I also got in touch when I got there with a Mary Jane Carney, I think her last name is, but she was wonderful. She's like, oh, you're going to come around. She's like, just to let you know though, you might not enjoy the day because, you know, it's our first time out and everything's going to be, you know, a lot there. And I was like, okay, well, we'll give her our best. And, you know, she kind of took me under her wing, that day. And I went again, the following weekend. So to make sure I, you know, kind of knew the ropes, but I didn't get myself into too much trouble, you know, cause I know it's very traditional. There's things that, you know, you don't do and you, you know, stay in line and there's a, you know, order of things. And I was like, oh Lord, like, that's all I need is to wreck the order.
So you had a little, you had like people anxiety, but your mare was, she was just cool the whole time.
Yeah. She's like, oh, look, hound. Oh, okay. She was more excited that she got to eat on this trail. She's like, oh, you stop and eat. She's like, that is wonderful. She's like, that is the best idea ever. Because that's what she wanted to do, is like eat and then run. Like, she has no in between. It's either stop or go. Like, it's, so she thought that was just glorious. And so she, except for the part with the water, which she figured out as the big hunter in front of us jumped it, that she could do that too, which was, you know, a wake up during the trail ride. I'm like, oh no. I'm like, she just gets this idea that she's going to jump this huge water kind of spread because the 16.3 horse in front of us can do it. And I'm like, well, we're 15 hands. I'm like, look, we have some limitations here. But she had a great time. She took to it and loved it. And she didn't care if the hounds were around her. She didn't care anything. I was more probably anxious that I didn't want us to look, you know, out of place or dumb or make anybody slow down or, you know, this is their opening day. You know, this is their thing, not mine.
What field did you end up riding in, Nikki?
I know it's, I think it's Assateague, but I'm not sure what exactly the field. I know it's...
Oh, no, I mean, yeah. Like within the hunt, the field, there's, you know, the front field, the middle field, the hilltopping field.
I think we're in, I'm not sure. I think we're in the hilltopping field. I mean, because there wasn't that, you know, we could go around the jumps, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I know there's only, I think, one field besides the Masters. I'm not sure of that whole how, who's...
Which, but you were more towards the back.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I was like,
what? That was actually in the front field. Holy moly.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Just in the back.
Was there anything that surprised you about hunting?
People are really relaxed. Like, they're not as I thought they were, you know, be more of the hunter field where, you know, everybody's kind of a little more prim and proper. And, you know, you go to show events and even dressage and everybody's kind of very serious. They're very laid back.
So it was the culture of the riders. It was the culture of the group that you were surprised with.
Yeah, I was. I was really surprised. I thought this was going to be like a secret sorority. You have to kind of like get aids to get in. I don't know. I just thought it was like from reading, I guess the manual was very like, you know, don't do this and don't say this and don't look this way.
Yeah, I thought, right.
You know, but it wasn't. It was really fun.
Yeah, there are a lot of, they say rules, but it's really not like, uptight. There are rules, but these rules aren't arbitrary. They're not made from egos. They're made for safety and practicality, which
absolutely
you find when you actually get out there. What did you ride in? Did you ride in your dressage saddle?
No, I had my old hunter saddle, and I put that on her. In fact, it's a funny story. I had bought a new one, a synthetic one, cheap one. And it broke the night before, and I'm like, oh no. Like, is this a sign of, like, I shouldn't do this? And then, like, the girth I bought didn't fit, but I had all my old tack. I'm like, I'm just going to throw the old tack on, and it fit her fine. And, you know, we're just going to go. And it was just weird being in, like, the hunter tack again because it's been so many years. I'm like, oh, this is definitely a difference.
Yeah.
Did you feel like that your dressage background, obviously you started out a hunter jumper, so it's not like riding hunt seat was totally foreign to you out there, but did you find that you used any of your dressage aids while you were riding?
Absolutely. I think dressage had prepared her for that. I think a lot of hunt riders maybe would benefit from dressage because there is that obedience. There's that, you know, when you need to stop, you stop. When you, you know, turn on the hindquarters when you are in a tight spot, you know, being able to... be collective, you know, and you're in a group and on a trail, you want that collection. You don't want to be able to run people over or be out of control. So there is a lot of elements.
Wait,
that
can you
really
stop?
Help.
Can you say, this is a first time fox hunter. You want to say that part again? You don't want to what?
Not out of control.
Well, it's funny because I had started out hunt seat, had a riding accident. When I came back, I started back in dressage or centered riding. And so I had focused on dressage a little bit right before, and I was riding dressage right before my first hunt. And I remember like leg yielding around some of the trappy footing up here. There, you know, you're riding around rocks or you have to move within a group. Sometimes you know, a trail can only fit one or two and yet you've got three horses who are heading for the same space. And so I found that a lot of the lateral aids you use in riding dressage became really important for hunting. So I always love to ask that question of anyone who's ridden dressage and then starts hunting. How do you find that the skills translate into the hunt field? So I really love that collection in particular is helpful out there.
How about communication too? I mean, you do a lot of communication. I think a lot of people don't really understand dressage. I know I didn't when I first started. I'm like, this is going to be boring. I can't wait to go back to jumping. But there's so much more. There's so much communication with you and your horse and so much ask of you and your horse. And, you know, so you develop that bond, that partnership. So if you're in trouble in the hunt field and you need to know that she's going to respond back and she's not going to need to act out. And, yeah, the leg yielding, like around there, moving her body, she's more I don't know what the word I want to look for, but malleable. She's more malleable than a lot that have not done dressage. And that's what I'm saying. I encourage dressage riders to get out and do the hunt field because I think they would enjoy it. It's like the next step, you know, taking some of what we learn in the arena and actually applying it to a realistic setting out in the hunt field and then having the hunt field, you know, come into dressage and actually learn some techniques that can help them in the hunt field.
That's true. Well, I'm just so impressed that you came out of the dressage ring, went out hunting, and now you're encouraging other dressage riders to give it a try. I hope that they'll follow along.
Me too. I'm trying to get the whole gang from my barn. I'm like, let's go. Come on, it'll be fine. Let's just do it. And they're all like, oh, we don't know. Because, I mean, some of them are considering it. Some of them have done it before and do want to come out again. And so I think it'd be nice to just, you know, it gives us a break. I mean, we compete during the year. It's a lot, and it's good for the horse. It's good for to get out into the country and experience new things because it helps in the show ring. I mean, when there's dogs at the show, you know, they don't respond. If there's a horn, if there's this, you know, they don't respond, which, you know, is great. I mean, both can work in tandem.
Do you think you'll go again?
Yes. I actually went I went opening day, and I went the second weekend, and I had a lot of fun then, too. I came as the master's guest. Which was really cool. I was like, oh, my God, they really like me.
Oh, that's so great.
So I probably will go again. I have school a lot of times on the weekends and obligations and, you know, going back to training for hopefully fourth level. We don't know if we're going to make that step yet. But, you know, I'd like to go back before the season, you know, is out to try it again and try to hopefully bring some of my friends with me.
That's a great plan. I love that plan. I love it.
Well, we're happy that you got a chance to go out. We're happy to have heard the story of it. And when you go out again, maybe you can come back on the show and tell us about your further adventures from the dressage arena to the hunt field. Will you come back?
Absolutely. I would love to come back. I love you guys. I love your show. And, you know, I would love to be able to talk to you guys again.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Nikki Lambert. And the hunt you went out with was?
A Monmouth County hunt.
Thank you for listening in today. We hope you will join us on Facebook, where we feature functional and fun apparel advice for fox hunters and their friends.
If you are a fox hunter and would like to be on the show, send us an email to email@chasingafox.com. We really want to get to know our fans. Or if you're interested in learning more about fox hunting, send us a note and we will happily share our resources, just as we did for Nikki, and look where it got her.
And while you're at it, be sure to visit all the great shows on the Horse Radio Network at www.horseradionetwork.com.
Many thanks to today's sponsors, Ontite Magnetic Stirrup System and Sparklin' Boom. You can find links to their websites at chasingafox.com. Thanks again for following along. We will be back in 2 weeks with more from Chasing a Fox in a Little Black Dress.
Well, thanks for joining us on this Thursday Horses in the Morning mashup. Glenn and Jamie will be back tomorrow with some hints on how to decorate your barn for the holidays, compliments of Canter Lane Designs' Shelley Garitzma, and, of course, really bad ads.